I'm holding on page 64 in Yuma, about the middle of the page, still the middle of Osamahe. Still in the middle of talking about the Mon. The last thing we learned was that the Mon would get completely absorbed into all of a person's organs so that there wasn't any waste. But then we said, on the other hand, that was Rabbi Shmuel's Darasha. On the other hand, we said there's a pasuk that talks about the dinim of how to go to the bathroom in the machne, where they have to dig and cover it. And so first Rabbi Shmuel had said that refers to when they have food that they bought from the Goyish, from Goyish traders who passed through the desert. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Parita said, no, it's actually after they complained the last time about the mon, Parshas Chukas, and said, and called it Lechem HaKloikel, then Hashem says, look, you want to have to go to the bathroom, fine, you're going to have to go to the bathroom. So now, continuing on that, the Pasuk says, V'ata nafshenu yivesha ein kol, back in Parshas Ba'aloska, they're complaining about the mon. They're saying now, as compared to, they're saying the luxuries in Mitzrayim, quote unquote, you know, like we said before, they had fish for free, which we talked about whether it means actual fish or whether it means that they were free with arayas, etc. Anyway, now they're saying, V'ata now, nafshenu yivesha, our souls are dried up, ein kol, we don't have anything. So what do they mean by that? What particularly are they complaining about? So Rashi on the pasuk means, in other words, they're complaining, all we have is mon baboka, mon ba'er, says, that, although they're saying all we have night and day is mon. But, now the Gemara is understanding differently that it means, omru, they said there's a problem with the mon itself. Osid mon zeshi yitbach the me'ehem v'yahargim. Eventually this mon is going to swell up in their stomachs, meaning in our stomachs, but they don't want to say it directly about themselves, and kill them. Have you ever heard of a human being who takes in and doesn't excrete? Every human being has to go to the bathroom at some point, and here we're not. So they're complaining. So in other words, the same complaint that they had later on. Here the Gemara is saying they were already complaining about that back in Parshas Ba'aloska. So. So now, I mean, in Baal Oso, it's the second year in the Midbar. It's shortly after they left Har Sinai, and they're complaining that all we have is mon to eat, and on top of that, they're claiming that it's not healthy. Marsha explains, now one thing is, they were complaining we don't have fish. Fish live in the water. So now they're saying, not only we don't have fish which come from the water, all we have is this dry stuff. And they're saying, as far as now Moshe has previously explained to them that the mon is actually, we talked about yesterday about it being the food of the malachim, but there's also the idea, the Gemara says in Chagiga, that it's also the food for the tzaddikim, l'asid lava, in Olam Haba. So Olam Haba, we know, is described as kol. That's what we say, that we say in benching, that Hashem should bench us by kol mikol kol, just like the Ovis, where the Gemara mentions in Baba Basra, that it means that the Ovis had me'ein Olam Haba in this world, because by each one of them it says kol. So therefore, these people, these Rishoyim, are complaining, saying, on the contrary, we don't want this Olam Haba, we don't want this Olam Haba stuff, we want real, plain, gashmiyasika food, not the kind that you're telling us gets completely absorbed and doesn't get, and you don't need to excrete anything. That's not the kind of thing they want. We're talking about the Rishoyim among the Jewish people. So there's not necessarily one representative. I mean, the expression in the Pasuk, you have Vosafsu Pashad Kibro. First, you have the Erev Rav started having a taiva, and then Vayashuhu Vayivku Gam Bnei Yisrael. And then some Jews went along with them as well. There wasn't necessarily one particular spokesman. It was more like a generalized discontent that there was.
When we forced it, not everybody agreed.
Obviously, not everybody agreed, and we're saying that even later on, the implication is that only the Rishoyim had eventually had this, where the mon doesn't get completely absorbed and it produces waste and so on and so forth.
Can you change it around?
What?
Can you change it
around? Change what around?
Hashem wanted to make it like
my love. So okay, lost it, love. When Mashiach comes, and when we reach the stage, when it talks about Sidrus, when we're neshamas the gufim, but the gufim themselves are on an incomparably higher level, then they'll be. That's what it says in Gemara. That's exactly that. Yeah. Anyway, Marsha summarizes, in other words, so what happened was, so these people are complaining, ein kol, meaning we don't want the kol, we don't want the ma'en olam haba. Sure enough, they don't get the ma'en olam haba that you could get out of the mon. For them, it was just like plain food. Okay. There is that kind of Tamidi and Itaino. Yeah, there is that. There is, we talked about a couple of days ago, something that the Tzur Amur brings, a story involving a Goyish king and a Chacham who was his personal physician, where the king says how ungrateful of the Jews, and the Yid shows him, you know, you don't have your after dinner garlic for one day and you're complaining. So there's a certain limud schos on them, but yeah. Anyway. That's how we got into this discussion about the mon in the first place, is because the Gemara had brought that pasuk that inui is associated first with the hunger before they had the mon, and then afterwards with the mon itself. One thing is, we talked about, that's the connection with Yom Kippur, because we're saying on Yom Kippur, ta'anu asnafshi seichem, and one of the points is, therefore, that you do inui by not eating, just like before they had the mon. Incidentally, the Rebbe points out in a sicha a deeper connection in that regard. You know, when it comes to Yom Kippur, later on in the Perek, the Gemara discusses the point. Now you have the shear that a person is chayev for eating on Yom Kippur is kakeseves hagasa, the size of a large date. Now usually in halacha you have the amount that's considered eating as kazayas. Here you have it's a larger amount, and the Gemara establishes because since by Yom Kippur it doesn't say the word not to eat, it says ta'anu esnaf sheisechem, the Chachamim figured out that when a person eats, so that when a person eats a date-sized piece of food, only then does it take the edge off his hunger, and then you don't have the tanu anymore. And the Gemara says, so what are you talking about? Size, small person. What if you have Oig Melech HaBoshen is fasting on Yom Kippur? You're going to tell me he gets, his hunger gets assuaged by a date-sized piece? And the Gemara says, yeah, by him it'll be a little bit, by a regular person it'll be a lot more, but they'll all feel the effect in the same way. And similarly by the mon, where every person had an Oimer, and no more, no less, regardless of the size of the person, regardless of the person's appetite, for every one of them, the Eidush made that the mon is exactly as an oimer of mon is exactly as much as they need. So there is actually that deeper connection as well. Well, so that was what we said at the beginning. Yeah, we learned at the beginning of the sugya. They couldn't see the shape of the food they're eating, even though the mon tastes like it. That was a certain degree of inui as well, we said. Yeah, so there is that as well. Yeah, definitely. So they were lacking that. That's true, that they didn't have the ability to see the different colors and shapes and tastes and whatever that you have in the food for which we're able to see and taste them and thank the Eidishter for them. It's true. So they were lacking that. Yeah. Alright, anyway, continues the Gemara. When this was told over to Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Lahem, he said to them, which we learned this yesterday as well, this seems to be a repeat of what we had in the Gemara before, so it's the first we'll learn it, and then we'll discuss why it's repeated. Omer Lahem, so he tells them, Al Tikri Abirim Ela Evorim, when the Pasuk says, Lachem Abirim, in today's Tillim, actually, when it says that the people ate the food of Abirim, and we learned yesterday that Akiva had said that meant the food of the Malachim, so don't read Abirim Ela Evorim, Dabash Nivla, but Machaybarim means the mon was absorbed into all 248 limbs. El mani makayim b'yosid tielachal azinecha. So what about the pasuk that talks about that you have to have a shovel among your equipment and use it to dig and cover your waste? Is dvarim shemavim lahem dinasayam, is things that were brought from other countries, from overseas, kind of from countries near the sea, where again, like we said before, you had tagru umasa'ulam, you had goyish merchants and traders traveling back and forth through the desert, and they would sell things to the Jews, so people who ate those would end up going to the bathroom. Now, why is the Gemara repeating this over here? In fact, some of the Mephoshim say, on the face of it, maybe a Taka doesn't belong over here. Agoy Sagra, in the Gemara, Taka takes it out, because it just seems to be a repeat of what we said before. With that said, though, the Rif talks about it here at some length and says that the reason why the Gemara is repeating it is because, Now, we were discussing the point that before we said that they were complaining, that they complained about the mon in Parshas Chukah, but before Rabbi Shmuel was saying that anything they buy from Tagru or Masa Olam makes them have to go to the bathroom. And we also had the point that Rabbi Elazar ben Parita had said that no, only after Parshas Chukah, only after they complained, v'nafshein ha'kotzav alechem ha'kloiko, then it started that they have to go to the bathroom. Now, here, where the Gemara has just quoted a pasuk from Parshas Baha'loscha, where already they're complaining, v'ata nafshein u'yivesha, would that imply that already from then, the mon was not getting fully digested and it's producing waste? So Rabbi Shmuel was saying no, nevertheless, even after that, it remained lechem abirim, and it was nivla ba'evorim. So even after Sohu, even after they acted wrongly that first time, and Baha'loscha complaining about the quality of the mon, nevertheless Hashem didn't take away that property of the mon, and it still continued to get absorbed in all the Evarim. So therefore he says that's a reason why, that would be a reason why the Gemara repeats that point from Rabbi Shmuel. Okay. Dover Acher, another explanation. Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish. So we have to look at why does it say in the singular. So we talked about yesterday. Marsha brings the point that first the pasuk begins in the singular, lechem abirim ochal ish, and then continues in the plural, say the shalach lahem masoiva. And Marsha explained the word is you have the yichidis gula who can be described as individuals where they got the full ruchniyastika quality of the man. To them it was the food of the malachim, lechem abirim. Whereas for the common people it was just say the shalach lahem masoiva. It was just something, this plain old food to satisfy them and fill them up in the desert over there. Now, the Gemara is understanding the word ish in a bit of a different sense. It taka means one individual among the Jewish people. Zeh Yeshua, sheyorod leman keneged kol Yisrael. It refers specifically to Yeshua, who man fell for him individually, equal to all of the Jewish people. So Rashi explains, we're talking about when Moshe left the Machne to go up to Har Sinai, and he leaves, and he goes, Vayakam Moshe v'Yeshua Mishra, say at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and then Moshe goes up to the mountain, and Yeshua stays over there by the foot of the mountain, waiting for his death. We actually find later on in Parshas Kisisa, when Moshe comes back down and he hears the noise going on from the Machne, where everybody's worshiping, where not everybody, where people are worshiping the eagle, Yeshua hears the sound and he doesn't know what's going on either. And he thinks there's a battle going on over there. And Moshe has to tell him, no, that's not the sounds of a battle. Why? Because Yeshua was far away from everybody else. He was right there by the foot of Har Sinai waiting for Moshe. So now, during that time, Mun fell for him equivalent to what all the Jewish people had. Now, the question is, what's he going to do with 600,000 portions worth of mun? So Marsha explains that it means, in other words, that he was equal in level to the entire Jewish people. So the quality, the ruchnistic qualities that everybody got individually from the mun, Yeshua got them all just in himself, in his portion of mun. And it's symbolized by the fact the Jewish people we know are compared to the moon, and Yeshua himself individually is compared to the moon as well. Pnei Yeshua to Pnei Levon. So therefore, symbolically, he's equal. He's one person who's equivalent to the entire Jewish people. So therefore, he gets mon, connected to Israel, not necessarily meaning, in other words, that he gets 600,000 oymen of a mon, but in other words, that he got the ruchniyastika advantages that everybody else got in mon. He got them all by himself. Because we find when Hashem tells Moshe to appoint Yeshua as the next leader, Hashem calls him Ish. So we see that the Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish refers to him as well. The question is, Ve'ema Moshe. So maybe say that the word Ish over here refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. So, he didn't eat on Har Sinai, of course, but maybe when he came back down, then he was given mon equal to everybody else. Or for that matter, Marsha, that's one possibility, Marsha says. The other possibility is even on Har Sinai itself. Again, Moshe is obviously having the ruchniyistika aspect of the mon, even when he's eating on a day-to-day basis, not so much the gashniyistika aspect. So even on Har Sinai, maybe he could have that. So maybe the ish refers to him. Dichtibo ish Moshe on of Moed. And Moshe is also called an ish. And the answer is don in ish me ish, ve'in don in ish me ho ish. Because by Yeshua it says the word ish, which is the same as the word, is exactly the same as the word in Tillim, whereas by Moshe it says ho ish, which is different, so therefore it's not necessarily meaning to equate Moshe with the rest of the Jewish people. But Yeshua, yes. What? Well, what we're saying is, so first of all, Marsha says, we could be talking about after Moshe came back down from Har Sinai. We're not saying that he received mon equal to everybody else, but we're saying that Yeshua did. And also, even on Har Sinai itself, conceivably, Moshe could have gotten mon during that time, because it's a ruchniyistika food. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying that that's not what the pasuk in Tillim means. Tosfos Yeshanim adds, so what about, we also find the word ish by Moshe. We find Moshe ish ha'alekim. And he says, fine, but there it says ish together with ha'alekim. We're talking about the Pasuk in Tillim says only Ish, and by Yeshua also it says Ish, the plain. So therefore the Gemara assumes that it's referring to Yeshua rather than to Moshe. It's not a true Gzeir Shava, because for one thing you don't make a Divrei Torah and Divrei Kabbalah lo yafinan. We don't learn things in Torah from things in Nevi'im and Ksuvim. It's a remez. What? No, you could say even what that's what Marsha is saying. Conceivably, it could be inami. Marsha says, or you could say after the Bahar Kamar, the Gemara is asking the question. Maybe even conceivably on Har Sinai, Shamonu might ochal that he might have eaten Shamonu Michael Ruchni. The mon is a spiritual food. The lecha mamish le ochal Bahar Mem Yom. He didn't eat actual food on Har Sinai, but maybe he could have eaten mon. But the Gemara is saying no. Shalu Talmidei Vaser Pshimon Ben Yochai. Mitznei Ma Loi Hoya Yored Lahem LeYisrael Mon Pamachas Bashon. Why did the mon fall for the Jewish people once a year? Why did it fall every day individually? Now, the Rif says, what's the question? The Torah clearly says, L'man anasenu, Hashem wants to test them and see if they're going to follow his mitzvahs, not to leave over man from one day to the next. So, of course, they can't gather a year's supply at a time. So he explains, the question really was, Hashem could have made a year's supply falls at a time, and then Hashem tells them, every day, go out and gather for that day. Why does it have to be that every day it falls, and then whatever they don't collect by 4 hours into the day melts away, and then the next day it has to fall all over again? Daniel Yoder points out that Pnimius and Yonim, this is Rabbi Shimon Ben Yofo's Talmidim, are asking him, they being his Talmidim and Kabbalah as well, they know that Api Kabbalah, to a certain extent of Nigla as well, we have a person's whole sustenance is determined on Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, they're wondering, why didn't the Eibishter just send down the entire supplies year, or the entire year's supply of mon on Rosh Hashanah? So he says, I'll give you an analogy. There was a human king who had a son. So he arranged, he decided that his son is going to get X amount of food for the entire year. And he's going to be given it one day a year. So now the son only goes to greet his father once a year when he's going to get his stipend or when he's going to say thanks to his father for it. So instead, the king arranged that the son is going to get his parnasa every day individually. Wouldn't it be derech eretz then that son should be greeting his father every day? So as a Tach Yisrael, so Rav Shimon tells them the same thing with the Jewish people. Imagine you have a person who has 4 or 5 children. Now, Mela, if he has a small family, Marsha says, then fine. He can manage with what they buy from Tagru or Masolam. You have the small amounts of food that Goyish merchants, like we said before, traveling through the desert, bring with them. A person with a small family might be able to get by on that. But if he has a large family, you're not going to be able to manage with that. So he would be worried and be saying, Shemala Mocha in a mon yorin. What if the mon doesn't fall tomorrow? The nimtzu b'neim of Nesei and Mason Barav, and then their children are going to die of hunger. The nimtzu koisrum chavnim aslivim avim shavashmayim. So that way, the entire Jewish people had to focus their hearts on Hashem, realizing on a day to day basis that they are dependent on Hashem, and that was what Hashem wanted to inculcate within them, that high level of betochen throughout the 40 years, and therefore that's why it had to be given on an individual daily basis, and why they can't save over from one day to another. We at the beginning of the sugya, I mentioned something that it says in a medrash where Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, the famous Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, says in a similar vein, even nowadays a person has food for today and he's worried about what's going to be tomorrow, then he's mechoser amana, he's ketane amana, I think is the lashon he says, he's one of the lesser bali amuna. A person has to have a high level of amuna to realize that the Eibishter can provide for me today, for today, and I don't need to worry about tomorrow.
So it happens with the exact event.
Why not?
Father must have a connection with the son every day.
Here, the Nimshal is exactly the same thing. The Jewish people have to have a connection.
Here it's a Munah. It's a Munah.
That's what we're saying. It's a Munah. There's a Munah and then there's Bitochen, where Bitochen is more like practical down to earth and Munah. But the point is, every day Yid needs to daven to Hashem and make sure to have a connection with Hashem. Am I going to deserve Mon tomorrow?
Father must have a connection with the son every day. Love the child.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, so you're saying in the Nimshal it's more doyeg v'omer? No, but that's why he finishes off with the positive thing. The Nimshal is machavnim aslidim laviyim shavashmayim, that they focus on Hashem. In other words, they have that daily connection with Hashem that I need to make sure that I'm on the level to deserve mon tomorrow. Okay. Dover Acha, another explanation. Why did it fall every day? Mon sha'ulchem oisek shul cham. Another reason is this way they can eat it when it's fresh and hot. If it fell on a year's supply at a time, then by the time they collect it the other days, it would be cold. A whole year's supply should stay hot, yeah. Maybe, but instead, but I'm going to spoke like, oh, the nisal magnash and doesn't do a nest for nothing, so therefore instead. Okay, lachem apanim is lachem apanim, but here they actually didn't have to do that. By the way, Marsha points out the Beinanim and the Rishoyim anyway have it hot all the time, because we learned before, they have to prepare it and they have to cook it. The Tzadikim, who got it ready-made, for them, Hashem wants to make sure that they have it fresh and hot on a daily basis. Dover Achim, if named Masri Haderach, another reason is because it would be a big burden to carry on the way. They're traveling throughout the Midbar. If they have to carry along a year's or a few months' supply of mung wherever they go, then it would be a hassle to do that.
Okay.
They wish they could make these miracles, but still, Hashem chose not to make those miracles. Ben Yehoyada points out over here the three reasons we have over here. The first one he explains as it's related to the word lamed. I think because the mashal begins lamelach basav adam, but I don't remember what he says. What the lamed stands for, the ches for cham and the mem for masui. So it stands for lechem, which we're saying the mon was the food, the bread that Hashem gave them. So therefore you have these three reasons why Hashem gave it to them on a daily basis. Okay. Now, how much mon fell every day? The Gemara says, "Chaval hoyer of Tarfin, Rabbi Shmuel, was kainim Yoshimim ba'oskim the parshas Amon." One time it happened that Rabbi Tarfin and Rabbi Shmuel and the others kainim were sitting and discussing the parshas Amon. V'hoyer Rabbi Lazar Amudoy Yoshib b'nehem, and Rabbi Lazar Amudoy was also sitting among the others kainim. Nen Rabbi Lazar Amudoy v'omer. So Rabbi Lazar Amudoy started open the conversation and said, "Mon sheyor lahem liYisrael hoyer gavaya samach ama." The mon that fell down for the Jewish people rose to a height, there were piles of mon, 60 amas tall. An amma being about a foot and a half to 2 feet, so you're talking somewhere between 90 and 120 feet. Omelet of Tarifin Mudoi, so he said, Mudoi, you from Moedian, where Rabbi Lazar is called Hamudoi, because he comes from the city of Moedian, Ad Mose Atem Gabir Dvorim, maybe Aleinu, how long are you just going to be gathering like random words and saying to us, where on earth are you getting this idea of 60, of 60 amas, of 60 amas tall? What? It's an oimer per person, but that's the question on the face of it. Then on the face of it, Rav Tarfon is saying an oimer per person, the size of Machne Yisrael doesn't necessarily have to be to a height of 60 amos. Where on earth are you getting 60 amos height from? The Pashtus, you know, you have, not necessarily was all the mon that fell every day collected. After all, the Pasuk says, b'cham ha-shemesh v'nomos, anything that wasn't collected would melt away after 4 hours in the day. By the way, the Medrash brings, it actually brings it on the Pasuk, that it would form streams, and wild animals in the desert would go drink from those streams, and later on, when Goyish trappers in the desert would catch those animals, they'd taste of the taste of mon, and they'd realize what the Jewish people are enjoying over there. Rashi brings that in part in the pasuk, yeah. But anyway, the point is, Rav Tarfon is saying it sounds like dibuvei dvarim, like a bunch of random statement that you're saying to say that it was 60 amos. Where are you getting that from? So he answers, Rebbe, Mikrani Dorish. I'm actually darshaning it from a pasuk. By the Mabul, the pasuk says, Hamesh Esri Milamaila Govru Hamoy. The water of the Mabul was 15 amas deep. Now, you have to consider, V'chitesvav amas be'emet, tesvav amas b'shtela u'b'horim. Do you think that it was 15 amas above the ground level everywhere? So it was 15 amas above the valleys and 15 amas above the mountains? First of all, the Chimaya Shuri Shuri Havukaimi. First of all, does water stay like that in individual, in Shuri means walls. Does water stand like that as individual walls? No, water seeks its own level. Now, Maharsha said, there is actually an opinion in Bereshis Rabbah that says just that. That says when it says Chameshis Ramim Al-Maila, it means there were powerful currents and powerful winds that made it that the water is 15 amas deep everywhere. However, the Gemara over here is assuming, and also Maharsha refers to a Gemara in Zvachim, that assumes it's not so. It means the minimum height of water anywhere in the world, even at the tops of the highest mountains, was 15 amas. The two tevusa hechisagya. Also, Rabbi Lazar says, if the water was 15 amas above the ground level everywhere, how would the teva be able to travel at the end? The teva lands on Horei Ararat. How would it go there? Boats without engines or oars or whatever, don't travel upstream. They go with the current. So how would the current, how would it go all the way to the top of Horei Ararat? Ella, rather, you have to understand, the ikruksiv nivku komayinus tohoim rabba. First, the pasuk says that all the fountains of the depths of below ground were burst open, meaning ad the shavu maya l'turi. So then you have water starts pouring out of those underground reservoirs until the water level was at the height of the tallest mountains. All of a sudden, ikruksiv chamesh esra amam elamayla, govra amoyim v'goymer. Then the pasuk says, 15 amas above the mountains, the water surged, which means, in other words, that you have, so let's say you have the tallest mountain is Mount Everest, is 29,000 and some feet tall. So first you have enough water coming out from underground to rise to a height of 29,000 feet. Then you have the arubos of Shemayim, the windows of Shemayim opened up and dumped down another 15 and dumped down another 15 amos height of water all over the world. Now, while Shaw points out that actually, I mean, in context of the Pasuk, and Rashi understands it similarly on the Pasuk, that the word Lamaila just means the water kept on rising until it was 15 amos above the mountain. So not necessarily, so here, the Gemara is taking it that only once the water level reached the heights of the mountains, only then did the heavens open up and then dump down the rest of the water. But here, on the Pasuk, and then in context of the Pasuk, it doesn't necessarily sound like that. Anyway, but Rabbi Elazar HaMajori is assuming that that's how it was. So now Rabbi Elazar says, "V'chi'ez a midah meruba." Now, when it comes to Hashem's midas of good versus of peronis, which one is greater, midah toivah or midas peronis? Which one does Hashem do more of goodness or of punishment? Hevi am a midah toivah meruba midas peronis. We know that always Hashem's midah of toivah is greater than the midah of peronis. You have the famous thing that it's 500 times as much because in the Aseret Dibros it mentions al shiloshim v'al ribayim, Hashem will punish the children on oichsim ma'aseh have the same b'yadayim up to four generations, and meanwhile v'oichsim chesed la'alafim Hashem repays the kindness, the goodness of tzaddikim for 2,000 generations. So 4 times 500. So here, fine, Marshall says it's not necessarily a ratio of 500, but at any rate, the point is, you always have to have the midah tovah is great. So now, continues Rebbe Elazar, the midas peronis u'oim of arubos ha'shamayim niftachu. When it comes to the peronis, so the marble, the pasuk describes it as the windows of Shemayim opened up. Over midah tovah k'siv, now when it comes to the good midah, when Hashem sent down the man, k'siv the dalsei Shemayim pasuk. The pasuk says Hashem opened up the doors of Shemayim. Doors are bigger than windows. And the next pasuk continues. Again, this is all in today's Tillim, very, very much as Man Grama, that Hashem rained down on them mon to eat. Now, the Tana, and we learn in a Braisa, Kama Arubis Yesh Badelis Dalu. How many windows are there in a door? In other words, either that literally a door sometimes is made up of panes of glass or whatever, so it has windows, or it just means that a door is a certain number of times the size of the square footage of a window. Dalu. There are four windows per door. Dalad and another four, because it says Dalsei, so therefore Hare Kanches. So it comes out then that there were two windows through which the marble rains fell. Marshal connects this with a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and also in Brachas that says that Hashem took two stars out of a mazel called Kima and brought the marble. So in the same token, we're saying over here, there were two windows, and on the other hand, when it comes to the mon, there were two doors, where a door is four times the size of a window. So you have four times the size. So if the water of the marble was 15 amos above the ground level, then the mon has to be four times that. Four times 15 is 60. So you're saying that's where I got my 60 from. Now the Gemara is going to go on to point out in a couple of lines that it's not so simple. You also have to factor in. On the other hand, the marble was on the whole world, and the mon was only in one particular area. What? Well, that's what we're talking about. That he's assuming, in other words, that the mon piled up to the mon that's falling from Shemayim would pile up to the same height as an equivalent amount of water. But first, the Gemara says, Tanya, Isi ben Yehudaima, Mon Sheyorad Lahem LeYisrael, the Mon that fell for the Jewish people, Misgabe V'Ola, it formed such tremendous piles, Ad Sheroyin Ose Kol Malchim Mizrach Umayrav, so that all the kings in the east and the west, meaning in all of the inhabited world, could see it. Often the Gemara uses Malchim Mizrach Umayrav to mean the entire known world, and Mephoshim point out in some places, I think Marsha points out in some places, for example, you go to the extreme north or the extreme south, you don't have that many people living there, relatively, because it's too cold or too hot. So civilization basically exists, and places where you have kings basically exist on an east-west axis. So all of them could see it. Shenema, as we find in the pasuk, Tarech l'fana shulchan neged tzorei v'gomer, you prepare for me a table in front of my enemies, and kosi revaya, my cup is overflowing. So the point is, in other words, that Hashem made the mon big enough that all the enemies of the Jewish people everywhere in the world could be able to see it. Ben Yehoyada says on the face of it, still, we have to ask, the fact is, they only needed one for the couple of million Jews who were there, one omer per day. Why would it be such enormous piles? And so he says, the vote is that Hashem first made, when the mon would first fall, it would swell up in order to make such tall towers of mon that everybody could see them all over the world. After that, it would shrink down to a more normal size, and everybody would collect their omer.
Doesn't
say what their reaction was. I don't know. I mean, Rashi on the pasuk doesn't mention what their reaction was either. Just that they found out what the Jewish people. Okay. Anyway, Marsha points out that actually a lot of things in that capital, that entire capital, refers to the experiences of the Jewish people in the desert. Hashem roi lo echser, I won't be lacking. The nois deshi abutzeni. All of it refers to the experiences of the Jewish people in the Midbar, which is why the Gemara is doubting this pasuk about it. Now, we say the word kosi revoya, my cup is overflowing, amar abaya, shmamina, we see from that, because of the word revoya, kosa, the David, la'alma da'asi, masrin v'esrin v'chad loga masi, the cup of David that he's going to make kosra brachan by the suda for the tzaddikim, lasid lover, which we learned about at the end of Pesachim, holds 221 logim. Shenema, kosi revoya, because the pasuk says revoya, my cup is revoya, revoya v'gimatria hochi havo, and the word revoya is gimatria 221. Why dat the lugim? Why not some other measurement? Why around ounces, whatever. Tosfos Shanim points out that a lug is the smallest liquid measurement that we ever find mentioned in the Torah. You find in the Torah, you have a hin, chatzi hin, whatever, and then you have a loig, echad shomen, when it comes to a mitzvah.
How much is it compared to an ounce?
A loig is about a pint, give or take, somewhere between, about a pint.
It's quite
a big cup. Yeah, a loig, yeah, it's quite, Ben Yehoyada says the same verse, the same way as he says the mon swelled up so everybody could see it, and then shrank down to a more normal size. He says that's why the Gemara is bringing this in over here, the same thing, David Amalas cup. A cup is normally a revius, and here it's going to grow to this enormous proportions, when it comes time for him to do kosher bro. The deeper one of the points, the deeper significance of this 200 of this figure 221, as it talks about in Chassidus, that's also the gematria of the word erech, as in that there's going to be a gilui from arech anpin from Pnimius Akeser at that point, and therefore that David's cup symbolizes that. There's a couple of long maimorim in Siddur and Dach on Birkas Amazin and on Birkas Azimun. All about the deeper idea behind the Suda Latzadikim Lasid Lavoi, and why Dr. David is the one who leads benching, and so on. And in that connection, it mentions also the significance of the size of his cup. However, the Gemara asks, Mi Dabyu, Holoi Damda. After all, it doesn't seem to be comparable. Rabbi Elazar Amudori is telling us, he's saying, because the water of the marble fell to a depth of 15 amos, therefore the mon, which was four times as much, like we said, must have been 60 amos. But how is it comparable? Hasam Memyoim, Bahaka Chodeshaita, the marble was falling for 40 days, the rain was falling 40 days straight. Here you have the mon for every day is falling only in a small amount of time. And furthermore, the marble rain was all over the world. Here it's just in the area of the camp of the Jewish people. So doesn't it come out then that you're going to have a lot more? If you start calculating it and you have the rush over here at the bottom of the page makes a whole calculation about how many hours are there in 40 days and then versus how much was the size of Machne Israel versus the size of the entire world. So it comes out really proportionately. It would come out then that the mon has to be a lot bigger, has to be a lot taller than 60 amos. So how does Rebbe Elazar Amudori's calculation work? Maushal says that maybe you could say the other way around. You could calculate it differently, and you could come out that maybe the mon shouldn't have been even as much as 60 amos tall when you consider that it was falling only during a short period of time. On the side over here, there's a long thing from a Pirush called Ateres Rosh, who makes a very elaborate calculation, and he says that actually you can come out that literally it was 500, according to Rav Elazar Amudori's calculation, it was 500 times Midah Tova more than Midah Spodonius. And he has a calculation that extends over here over pages and pages of the margin over here where he goes in and into a whole arichos about it. Anyway, so Elo, Rav Elazar Amudori, psicha gomer. Rather, the real thing is, Rav Elazar Amudori does not necessarily just make this mathematical calculation. He learns by Exeda Shava from the word psicha, because by the Mabul it says, Varubas HaShemayim Niftachu, and by the Mon it's saying, So therefore, we understand that even though it may not work out proportionally as far as the area and as far as the time, but nevertheless, that's how it was. 15 amas for every two windows, so 60 amas for eight windows, which is what four, which is what two doors consist of. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, Yod Tesvav Tevis. We have a famous expression in the Mishnah, which we have in the Haggadah, Kol Yimei Chayach, Lahav Yimei Samashiach, and that means, it talks about Nesicha, that the primary point in every single Yid's life, and in the totality of the Jewish people, throughout all the generations, is Lahav Yimei Samashiach. We stress that even more in our dur and in our period. What does Kol Yimei Chayach mean? It means every moment a person is alive, night or day, awake or asleep. Because after all, even asleep, the person is still breathing, and you have the expression in the pasuk "Kol Neshama Tahalukah Halalukah," where it says "Al Kol Neshima Veshima," that it means for every breath that a person takes, you ought to be thanking Hashem. So therefore, and breathing, you have to do every moment, unlike eating and drinking, and that means Kol Yimei Chayecha, a person's entire chayus, every moment that he's breathing, is going to be Lahavi Limosa Mashiach. So not just when he's doing things and thinking, not just when he's thinking and speaking and doing things to bring Mashiach, but just his whole mitzios of life. Is Lahavi the most Mashiach. We started talking yesterday about halachas of Kiddush on Shabbos. So we mentioned that Midaraisa, all you need to do is say verbally something about Shabbos. Midarabon, you need to say it on wine. There's a famous vote they say on that, by the way, that if a person, a man davens in shul, and he's said by a chulu, so how is he coming home and making Kiddush for his wife, who is also chayev in Kiddush Daraisa? And he's only chayev at this point, Dirabonin, on the face of it, she's chayev Daraisa. So there's a famous vort on this, I believe it's from Shlomo Kluger, but I don't remember. He says, so what happens, either he says, when the wife lights Shabbos candles, she says, Mahabit Ner Shal Shabbos Toydish, or just Shal Shabbos is the Nusach of the belt. So therefore, she's acknowledging the holiness of Shabbos with that. So therefore, she's also Yotze Kiddush on some level with that. Or another vort is that you say to her, good Shabbos, and she responds, good Shabbos, and that way also she's acknowledging the specialty of Shabbos. Okay, so now, so the next tiff, you're allowed to make kiddush and eat even if it's not nighttime yet. Now there are people who throughout the week daven maida bismana and Shabbos they daven early. So they would be so now they're also to eat within half an hour before tzeis hakochavim, unless the Alter Rebbe adds a detail that if it's a shachat chak, if the candles are going to go out and it's going to be dark before nighttime, then you have a little more leeway. So therefore, if it's more than half an hour until tzeis, then you have to, rather if it's less than half an hour until tzeis, then you would have to wait until tzeis, then you say kirishma, and then you make kiddush. Other than that, in general, you're not allowed to taste anything, even water, before kiddush. Yeah.